Good morning, everyone. Yeah, it's a little too close. It's amazing sometimes, you all probably don't get to see it all, but sometimes it's a perfect setup, how things kind of develop throughout the morning. And you'll understand what I mean in a few minutes when we get into the lesson. Everything from some of the things that have been happening with my kids to just some of the people who are here today. We've been on this series talking about fish stories. And as we spent the month of June talking about the different things and different aspects of Jesus' ministry, this month we were talking about the results of that ministry, the outcomes, what it looks like. How it is that people are impacted by the different things that Jesus has done in their life. And so today, I want to look at something. If I gave the sermon a title, I'd probably call it Total Recall, because we're going to talk about memories. We're going to talk about digging in the back of your brain and thinking of things that maybe you haven't thought about in a while. And actually, this would be less of a sermon and more of a conversation. It probably wouldn't be safe or proper decorum for me to get up here and put a stool or something. But I'd like to just sit down and have a conversation, because I really want to ask a lot of questions. A lot of questions that are going to make us think. Things that are going to challenge us. But this is something that each and every individual should be able to pull from, to be able to grab something from. So I want to go ahead and jump right in, and we're going to start looking in Exodus chapter 7, if you want to turn there. I'll start reading in verse 14. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is unyielding. He refused to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he goes out to the river. Confront him on the banks of the Nile, and take in your hand the staff that was changed into a snake. Then say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to say to you, let my people go so that they may worship me in the wilderness. But until now, you have not listened. This is what the Lord says. By this you will know that I am the Lord. With the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water of the Nile, and it will be changed into blood. The fish in the Nile will die, and the river will stink. The Egyptians will not be able to drink its water. The Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the streams and canals, over the ponds, and all the reservoirs, and they will turn to blood. Blood will be everywhere in Egypt, even in vessels of wood and stone. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord had commanded. He raised his staff in the presence of Pharaoh and his officials and struck the water of the Nile, and all the water was changed into blood. The fish of the Nile died. And the river smelled so bad that the Egyptians could not drink its water. Blood was everywhere in Egypt, but the Egyptian magicians did the same things by their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen to Moses and Aaron. Just as the Lord had said, instead he turned and went into his palace and did not take even this to heart. And all the Egyptians dug along the Nile to get drinking water because they could not drink the water of the river." Now, most of us are pretty familiar with the story of the plagues. And this was actually the first of the many plagues that would come upon the Egyptians. And it's kind of important to understand some context of this story. And what this meant, this wasn't just like if a person were to die, if there were a really bad accident and you had blood. No. what you see here is an event where the place where God's people were, they were spared. They didn't have to go through this. This was a plague that affected all of the rest of the people in Egypt. All of Pharaoh and his officials and all the many homes he had. And it was interesting because on Friday, I went to go pick up my daughter. And she stays over here, where her daycare is. It's not too far from here. It's over, I guess that's Wyoming. But wherever it was, I got out of the car. And as I walked up to the door, I walked in and I asked, her name is Katie. I said, "Miss Katie, it stinks. What is this awful smell, right?" And she's telling me, she said, "Oh, that's just the cabbages." And I'm thinking, cabbages? She said, "Yeah, this is what it smells like over here when, you know, it's time they start picking them and going through, doing whatever farmers do with cabbage." And I thought, this is the most awful smell ever, right? I was so glad to get in my car and drive away. And this is cabbage. And anybody who's ever smelled like when you're driving down the road, whatever it is, I think she gets this from her mom. But my daughter, Kendall, has this sensory thing where it's like she smells anything and everything, right? And so, like, we'll drive down the road, and it's like, I've smelled roadkill before, or a dead deer, or a dog, or something. My daughter's like, "Oh, my gosh, roll the windows up. This is awful," right? She just can't stand it. And, you know, my son, being who he is, he's kind of like, "It's going to go away soon. It's just a dead animal." But if you can imagine the smell of roadkill, or the smell of, like, anybody's ever been fishing, or even if you go out on a lake, like on a day like today when it's really hot, you can smell the lake. Imagine nothing but blood and dead fish and the scent that it has. And this is all over Egypt. Like, there's no getting in the car, rolling up the windows, turning the air conditioning on high, and driving away. It's everywhere around us. Now, if you can imagine that, and just consider how hard your heart has to be to decide, you know what? No, I'm still not going to do what God says. I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. I'm going to harden my heart. And then consider that this is the first of the plagues. Like, it kept going, right? So we know that Pharaoh kept his heart hard. And after that, they had gnats or lice. There was frogs everywhere. Okay, so you think, you know, I know I'm looking at some of your faces, and frogs, you're looking at them like, "Oh, these are disgusting," right? So you can imagine frogs and gnats and all this blood in the water and all these dead fish. And they relied on fish to be able to eat. This was a source of food for them. So and then also, too, the water, they couldn't drink it. They had to do these canals where they had to basically filter out the blood in the water to give any type of relief. And as the water is coming from the river and is going through the sand and the rocks and everything, it's filtering out the blood as best they could. So it's not just Pharaoh's heart being hard, but he's imposing this same, you know, inconvenience and this same danger on these people that he's leading. But then it goes on, and you have this plague of flies that comes along, and then you have this, what they call pestilence, on the livestock. Anybody who's ever owned, like, cows and farm animals knows that it's like you start killing your animals off, you know, you're in trouble. And then they had boils. Now, I was just sharing with somebody earlier how, see, I have eczema, and, you know, I'm having a rough patch. But I can only imagine what it was like to have boils that are on your skin and also on your animals, the ones who didn't get killed off. And then there was hail and thunder and lightning. And then there was a plague of these locusts that came. And this is all happening. And the pattern that we would see if we were to keep reading is that Pharaoh's heart was hard. This stuff would happen to him. He would say, "Okay, I'm going to let the people go." And then as soon as it stopped, he changed his mind again. But then it continues, and there was this plague of darkness. And everybody was terrified because it wasn't just dark, but they couldn't even light their lanterns and be able to see. So they were stuck at home because they couldn't go out. And then finally, there was a plague that inflicted all the firstborn sons of every Egyptian. You know, this is where God says, hey, you know, take the blood, you put it over your threshold of your door, and then the spirit will come by and it will pass over you, but it will take their firstborn sons. And all this weeping, and you can imagine if we, just say us 50 or so odd people in here, if we all we heard was crying and moaning and people just, you know, tormented and in anguish because they lost their child. After losing all their livestock and having scabs and sores all over their bodies and they can't drink the water, so they're probably having dehydration and all these other things, and you're sitting here watching this and you're protected by the one true living God. And so finally Pharaoh decides to let the people go. But even still, in true Pharaoh form, he changes his mind and he comes after them. And then you watch as you cross through the Red Sea and all of Pharaoh's soldiers get stuck and drown. And so then the question comes, why was God punishing Egypt in the first place? Why was all of these things, why did all this occur in the first place? Number one, God wanted to make sure that he showed justice for his people. He wanted to establish that he was a just God and that he saw their torment, he saw how they were being punished, he saw how they were being mistreated at the hands of the Egyptians, and he wanted to let them know that that justice, that injustice was not going to go unpunished. But also, he wanted to establish how much he truly loved his people. He wanted to establish for them how much he valued them. It's kind of like if I'm being bullied or picked on or mistreated, and then I see Ben, and I see Andrew, and Steve, and Daniel, and they show up. And they show up, and, well, they take care of it, let's just say. You know, I would be not only indebted to them for protecting me, but I would probably well over with love and just almost humility, I guess you could say, for just how much they were willing to take care of me. They were willing to vindicate me. That's what God was doing in this situation. And again, we don't want to spend too much time on this because there's more to the story I want to get to in a short time. But when you consider this, and I did this where I went back, because what's going to happen is if we look in Exodus chapter 16, this is quite amazing, actually. It says, the whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Aaron is probably thinking, how did I get lumped into this? Kind of like Ben when he was going through the song slides, and it's actually my fault because I messed it up. But the Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt, there we sat around pots of meat. Now, I want to stick here for a second because it says there in the 15th day of the second month. So going by our modern calendar, we're talking 45 days after you've smelled the stench of all these fish and you've seen the boils and you've seen the flies and the gnats and all this livestock dying. 45 days after that, you're already grumbling. You're already complaining. It was interesting. I went back and I said, what would be 45 days prior to now? So went back to June the 9th, right? Now, there's this story. There's a lot of things that were happening back then. The Cavaliers hadn't won the championship yet. You know, Bernie Sanders hadn't conceded. There's all kinds of things. We think 45 days wasn't that long ago. We're talking roughly 6 weeks, right? Well, there's this story of a Detroit man. His name is Devontae Sanford, okay? He was released after spending 8 years in prison, starting when he was 14 years old. After he was wrongly convicted for a quadruple murder, he was arrested after he was approached by the police near the scene of the crime. They, after hours of interrogation, over 2 days, he confessed. Witnesses said his voice sounded like one of the shooters, but 2 weeks after the sentencing, a hitman confessed to the murders. And it's kind of hard to think, if the hitman confessed to it and he's a professional hitman, why are we still like going after a 14-year-old? But nonetheless, the point is, after 8 years in prison, this is his first time getting out. It's hard to believe that 45, like today, trust me, he still remembers being exonerated. He still remembers being set free because of the impact that had on him. Not only because he was a young boy, but it's amazing how quickly people can forget. It's amazing how quickly we can forget what it is that God has done for us in such a short amount of time. And so I kind of want to look over to Matthew chapter 16, because when we think about how quickly the Hebrews forgot, sometimes we can look at it almost kind of like I am right here, where I'm looking down, and we forget that, well, the same thing applies to us. Do we remember what God did for us? Do we remember a time when we were sinful and lost? Do we remember when maybe God forgave us of something that we did? Do we remember a time, and again, it doesn't have to be 45 days ago, or even in some cases 45 years ago. It could be yesterday. Do we remember when we had cancer? Do we remember when our wife or our husband was dying and we were pleading for God to restore their health? Do we remember when our mother or our father died and we asked God to just take the sorrow away? Do we remember when we were struggling, we were broke, we couldn't feed our families, we couldn't pay our bills, and God provided, kind of like what he did for them, and if you continue the story in Exodus 16, how he gave them manna, he provided them quail. Because we certainly can remember complaining. We certainly can recall a time where we weren't really, let's just say, paying attention to all the blessings, but we were paying more attention to the things that we saw wrong in our life. Do we remember how much God made things right for us? And in Matthew chapter 16, we see here where Jesus asked Peter, who do people say the Son of Man is? He asked all of his disciples this, and they responded with, you know, some say that you're Elijah, some say that you're a prophet, some say that you're John the Baptist. But Peter says, you're the Son of Man. You're the Messiah. You're who we were waiting for. And he says, blessed are you, because this was revealed to you not by flesh and blood, meaning this was revealed to you, and I didn't even have to go to the cross and die yet. You understand what it means to be in my presence. You understand what it means to have me in your life right now. And so my first question is, who do we say that the Son of Man is? What is your testimony? Because just like the Israelites had a story, and they were taught, and they passed this down to their children, they passed it down to future generations. They told people the goodness of God and how he saved them. Well, what is your story? What do you tell your friends, your neighbors, your children, your family, all of the people that you meet. What do you say is your story, your big fish story? See, people who go out fishing, it was funny because Ben said this last week how, you know, half the time people exaggerate the story and the story wasn't even all the way true and the fish wasn't even 3 feet, it was just a foot. And there's all these things about the story, but the question is, what is your story? We can look through the scriptures and we can teach people the gospel. We can show them step by step. But what do you say? That's what Jesus was asking them. Who do you say that I am? And the next question I have is, how many times does Jesus have to reveal himself before we completely trust and obey him? When we go back to Exodus and we see, it was so hard for Moses to lead the people because they kept forgetting. He kept providing for them. He kept giving them food, and they were disobedient the way they were handling it, and he gave them the land, but they were fearful. You think, how many times does God have to show up in your life before you're willing to tell the story? How many times would Ben and Andrew and Steve, how many times would they have to show up to bail me out of jail or to help me fix my car to stand up to somebody who's bullying me? How many times does God have to show up before we're willing to tell the story? It's interesting when you think about the Exodus and how part of the reason why it took them 40 years to take over a land that was only a couple weeks walk away was because they were afraid. Now, Joshua and Caleb were not afraid. But the other 10 spies who went in, they were afraid. You know, we're small and they're huge and they're giants and we look like grasshoppers. We're tiny. We're itty-bitty. We can't possibly take them. This is impossible for us to do. They were afraid. And you think to yourself, well, just a little while ago, he got rid of Pharaoh and all his armies. He plagued everybody. What more does God have to do in your life? Or are we paying attention to what God is doing in our life? Are we only thinking about the things that we consider problems and excuses and the things that are interfering? Or do we truly understand what God is doing in our life? Because he's not just doing it just for us. He's doing it the same way. God hasn't changed. The same reason why he wanted the Hebrews and his people to be an example to all the other nations is the same reason why he does so many great things for us, so that we can be that example to all the other nations and people around us. That's exactly why Jesus came. But how many more times does he have to bail us out? People need to have their own story. And I highlight this point because sometimes we think, well, it would be great if I could get my friend or my mom or my son or daughter or niece or whoever to come to church, because I know that Ben's going to deliver the word. I know Bill's going to get up there and he's going to preach. I know that they can hear the word preached and taught in a way that will be meaningful and it will have an impact on their life. But as I was sharing with someone yesterday, actually, there's a lot of people who are turned off by church. They're turned off by church people, but they're listening to you. They're talking to you. They're having a conversation with you. You yourself have to have a story to tell. You yourself have experienced the goodness of God. Why would you bring them to me, somebody that they don't know? Why would you bring them to an elder or a deacon or someone? Why not tell them your story? You know, back in Egypt, I'm sure that in different neighborhoods and in different places, the smell might have been a little bit different. I'm sure the flies were more on this side of town than on the other side of town or whatever it is. But the fact is, everybody has their perspective. Everybody sees something. The beauty of what we've been doing in the Sunday school classes has been looking at the different gospels. And what's important to understand about the gospels is all four of those gospels were not written in lockstep. They all came from a different perspective. They all came from a different point of view. Every last person in here has a point of view. We have to know and trust that part of the reason why we have that point of view, part of the reason why Ben's point of view is different than Jackie's point of view and is different than Neil's point of view is because the people that are in your life need to hear your story. If you wanted them to hear my story, he'd bring them to me. But he brought them to your life. That's why you work with that person. That's why you live next door to that person. That's why you were at this place at this time when this particular thing happened. That's why God sent Philip to stand next to the chariot. Because they needed to hear it from them. Do we have a fish story? Do we have a story about how God revealed himself? Do we have a story about how God has impacted us? About how following in the example of Christ has meant something? I'm so encouraged when I see people. You know, it was interesting. Brother Al back there, he told me on Wednesday, he said, you know, I was at the gas station, and there's this lady I know. I see her because, you know, he has this routine or whatever, and he saw her, and he was talking to her, and he asked her, why don't you come out to Bible study? What, you know, he tells everybody who listen about how before he encountered the church, how he was just kind of going along. It was church. He went to church. He grew up in church. But it wasn't until, and it's always a woman involved, but he said how that when he met his wife and she brought him to the Church of Christ and they taught him the scriptures. He said he wouldn't just walk away from church thinking, I don't even know what that man said. But he would actually walk away with something on his mind, something to think about, something to challenge him, something to convict him, something to increase his relationship with God. And all these years later, long after he left Panama, he's still telling his story. He's still telling anybody who will listen, because that's what matters. Not how they respond. You plant the seed. You tell the story. You share with your the people that are around you your story and how Jesus has affected you, and you take them to the scriptures. Does anybody know who this is or what this is? So interestingly enough, it was funny because I'm driving up and down the road, and I've been here picking up different things and meeting people. And a few days ago, there's these guys walking around the building, right? Now, I don't know these people, okay? Two younger white teenagers, they're walking around the building as I was driving this way, right? And I thought, okay, maybe they're lost, maybe whatever. And so about a half hour later, I'm driving back, and they're still out there, and they're canvassing the parking lot, and one of them was down in the well. And I'm thinking, what in the world? And so then it occurred to me, because I had a conversation with somebody last week. This is called Pokemon Go, okay? Now, basically, the idea is this. Pokemon is really popular. It was a cartoon. They turned into this game where it's not you're just collecting cards. But the reason why it's Pokemon Go instead of just Pokemon is because Pokemon Go means you actually have to get up, walk around, go different places to find these Pokemon characters, these monsters, right? And I see she little kid's nodding because she knows exactly what I'm talking about. Now, here's the thing about Pokemon. They're telling anybody and everybody to download this app. There was a lady up in New York, got stuck in a tree, fell out of the tree, trying to find this Pokemon character. Like, this is spreading like wildfire. And as I was talking to the two gentlemen right over here in the parking lot, I asked them if they'd go to church, and they said, no, not really. This is as close to a church I've been in as long as I can remember. Isn't it kind of convicting that Pokemon Go is willing to get people to come to the church and talk to people about coming to the church. Because, see, Pokemon ain't got nothing to lose. He don't care. He's, you know, accomplished what he was trying to accomplish. The question for us is, do we have that attitude that, you know what, I have nothing to lose. Doesn't matter to me what people think. I want people to come find Christ. Because I told him, I said, you know you can find Jesus in there too, right? Not just the Pokemon monster. The reason why I said it was so fitting that all of the different things, even what Neil shared about our guest today, is we think about and I've talked to Kay on this, about this on different occasions, about the long history of this church. And just like people shared the stories and the traditions of how God set his people free from Egypt, just like the disciples after Jesus was resurrected and went on, how they went out to all different corners of the world sharing the gospel, they had a story to tell. Because they had been walking with Jesus for all those years. The Hebrews had a story to tell. And when we think about how, well, you know what? God's the same today as he was all those 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 years ago. We have a story to tell too. There are people who may not listen to me. They may not set foot in church. They may just be like those two teenagers that would show up for Pokemon. And they wouldn't listen to me. But they would listen to you. If you were willing to open your mouth and share the story. If you weren't afraid to share the story. If you had the heart and the conviction to share the story. Not of Ben's life or Ted's life or Pat's life. Of your life. I have a few questions. Do you remember the story of how God moved in your life? How often do you think about it? How often do you recount how your life was without a relationship with God? Who have you told your story to? And how long has it been since you've shared your story? To what lengths has God gone into loving you? How much patience, compassion, how much mercy, how much joy has he brought into your life? To what lengths has he gone? Because he went to great lengths for the Hebrews. But I dare say you all are no different than I am in that he's gone to great lengths in your life as well. Who do you say Christ is? What declaration does your life make about who Christ is? And what do your words say about who Christ is? If someone were to talk to you and talk about, I'm not a spiritual person or I don't believe in God, what would you say to them about Jesus? What has he meant to you? Who do you say Christ is? How many times does Christ have to die for you to tell the story? And when I say that, understand he only had to die once, but it was something that my grandmother used to say to me. It's like, when you continue to sin, when you continue to shame him, when you continue to be ashamed of him, he has to die over and over and over again. And we have to constantly be reminded. That's one of the unfortunate things about the human condition, is that we so often forget, and it doesn't take long. It doesn't take long for us to forget when we're broke, struggling, sick. God sends some manna, he provides, and then all of a sudden we forget, like minutes later it seems like. How many times does Christ have to die before we truly understand that we have to go share the story? And finally, what sign are you waiting for you to go higher in your life? What are you waiting for before you don't just know who Christ is and you know the gospel, but that you're living the gospel? At what point do you have to get the sign? Are you going to just continue to be like Pharaoh, who no matter what God did, his heart remained hard? It could be something as simple as, I know that I need to give up this sin in my life, but I'm just not ready. At what point, what sign are you waiting for that it's not worth it? It could be, well, I'm just not ready to be committed to Christ. I'm just not ready to commit to that life. Well, then, what sign are you waiting for? What has to happen before you're willing to commit your life to Christ? Does somebody have to get sick and die? Do you have to lose your job? Do you have to get boils? Do you have to be like Pharaoh and go through all of this? Or can you acknowledge it now, how much you need to commit your life to Christ? In order for us to be disciples of Christ, we have to remember the story. We have to understand our story and how much God puts into us through our marriage, through our children, through our jobs, through the people that surround us. The times when you should have died, but you didn't. The times when you should have been totally embarrassed and been that person on the news that we always look at, but it wasn't you. The time that he preserved you. I want us to ask ourselves, exactly what is it going to take? What sign is it going to take for us to go higher in our relationship with God? And if you haven't accepted Jesus, what is it going to take for you? These are all questions. We're all family here. But I want us to be encouraged, because just like all the amazing things that we saw and how God took care of his people, he's going to take care of us. He's looking after us. But he wants us in return to tell our story. Just like he asked the Hebrews, just like he told his disciples, he's asking us to tell the story. Share your big fish story. If you don't have a big fish story, don't walk out without one, because this could be the first big fish story, is you accepting Jesus and getting baptized. But let's walk away from here considering our story, sharing our story, and committing to creating more stories. Because it's not just about going back in history and, you know, talking about some legend of this giant fish. But it's also about us continuing, as long as we have breath in our bodies, to make more stories. You know, Jesus didn't die and then the disciples stopped. It kept going. We need to keep going when we leave here today. You ready to accept Jesus? Come get baptized? To learn what it means to be a disciple? This is the time to start your big fish story today. Let's stand and sing the song of invitation.